Good morning. It's so good to see you all, even masked and distanced. It's wonderful to see your joyful eyes, and I can tell you're smiling under the masks, at least I hope you are. I come to you from Erie, Pennsylvania, where I now live in a monastic community, a Benedictine community of sisters. And so when I heard that the invitation was to speak about silence, I thought, sure, yeah, I've learned something about silence in the last couple of years of living in monastic community. And then once I started to put it on paper, I realized how short I fall of the ideal of inner silence that I'm about to speak to you about. So I am sharing this in the humility of being on the journey toward inner silence, as we all are, as the monks that I live with are, and as I'm sure all of you are. So I'm grateful for the chance to share what I am currently learning about monastic silence. And I want to speak to both monastic silence, but also how it is a ground for interspiritual communities as well, and interfaith communities as this community is. So for the modern monk, both traditional monks and so-called new monastics, silence is a centerpiece. It's not the goal or purpose of the spiritual life, though. But it is sort of the axis around which a day moves or the spiritual life moves. So where does silence show up in the monastery? As you might expect, it shows up in a lot of places, pretty much everywhere, but just in little glimpses here and there. Silence is a through line throughout my days, but not in any romantic, cloistered sense. It's not a pious silence that creates a muted atmosphere. Rather, it's a contemplative silence that shows up occasionally during mealtime, in the morning and evening rituals we each engage in the pauses within our collective prayer, and in many more small moments that aren't empty of meaning, but rather full of emptiness, if that makes sense. It's a positive emptiness, a silence that feeds life rather than stifles or quiets the meaning of life. It took a while to get used to the normalcy of silence in the monastery, and I'm still learning how best to embrace it. Like so many of us, I'm thoroughly conditioned to fill silence with words, with any words, with podcasts, with music, and I often seek words rather than wordlessness. Silence can still be very awkward for me until I learned how to hear a different type of voice in the silence. So in search of a deepened relationship and understanding of silence, I turned to mystics and monastics to figure out where silence comes from and what the purpose of silence is. Recommended by a friend, I picked up a book by Spanish mystic priest Pablo Dors, and a book called The Biography of Silence, A Biography of Silence. He frames silence as an extraordinarily ordinary thing. Early on in his tiny treatise on silence, he wrote, "I must issue a warning that silence, at least as I have lived it, is nothing special. Silence is only the frame and the context that makes everything else possible." Silence, in his form of silent meditation that he's committed to, is primarily a practice of observation, observing more closely what is within and what is outside of you. He wrote, "Pure observation is transformation. As Simone Weil would say, there is no weapon more effective than attention." Silence helps us cultivate, then, the spiritual tool and technology of attention. In Dors' poetic writing, he says that this observation helps grow richer the interior flora and fauna within ourselves. But silence is not just inner landscaping. It's an excavation of true self. He said that through silence, we awaken our inner teacher and let them speak. In his words, meditation is a school of opening to reality. Silence is not for silence's own sake, then, but for the purpose of opening to reality, within and around. This rings true with another idea from Benedictine monk Brother David Stendelrast. In his book, A Listening Heart, he shares a story about being anchored in silence. He wrote, "Once our heart is anchored in silence, we will be able to listen even while we are speaking." And he tells this story. During one of the formal teaching sessions at Sonoma Mountain Zen Center, a sparrow started chirping outside. Stopping in mid-sentence, the Roshi put his palms together and bowed in silence, thanking for the bird's song. Not to be so wrapped up in our own talk that everything becomes an annoying distraction. That takes practice. Silence will make us hear appeals, which noise drowns out. The sights of devastated forests, the groans of lab monkeys with wired skulls, the sobs of mothers with babies at their emaciated breasts. We will begin to hear the truth that sets us free. As long as one creature in this world is oppressed and exploited, oppressor and victim alike lack freedom. From this quote by Brother David, we learn a couple more things about monastic silence. First, silence is something that comes from within. External conditions matter, yes, but ultimately silence is something we locate within ourselves. Many of us learned this in the last year and a half of pandemic. In the loss of our external lives, most of us had plenty of noise within ourselves. Anxiety, depression, loneliness, longing, the inner dialogue of fear and despair was at an all-time high, and still is. My time in quarantine was nothing like time spent at a hermitage, even though there were many external similarities to the two experiences. Quarantine was actually a time when I faced all the voices within myself and realized how much I needed to learn how to work with them and come to a more true inner silence. At the monastery, I've learned that all monks work through this, still work through this, facing the inward demons that steer us away from becoming our full, whole, and holy selves. And of course, I have not achieved inner silence. I don't know any monks or nuns that would claim they have either. We experience moments and glimpses on walks, in nature, and they're fleeting moments. They do not always last long. But that's okay, because this is the second part of what Brother David's quote teaches us. Silence is not the goal in monastic life. It is not the end in and of itself. Silence is the practice that leads us to the more of life. Silence opens us up to the cries of those in need. Silence helps us fulfill the purpose of the spiritual life by leading us into solidarity. When we learn how to shut up, we open up. We hear the cry around us and are able to receive it into our hearts, and we're able and open and free enough to respond. Again, as Brother David said, silence will make us hear appeals which noise drowns out. By practicing silence, he says, we will be able to hear the truth that sets us free. And it not only frees us, but it leads us to fight for the liberation of all creatures around us. In his words, as long as one creature in this world is oppressed and exploited, oppressor and victim alike lack freedom. Silence should not only lead us back into ourselves, but into ourselves so that we may go out and work for the life and liberation of others. Monks are among the people I know who are most committed to this collective liberation, to the solidarity that silence leads us into. Think of Thich Nhat Hanh, Thomas Merton, Dorothy Day. And that's where these two other monastic values come in, which support, uplift, and make possible silence and thus radical openness to the world's needs. Those values, essential for silence and solidarity, are solitude and stability. In order to work towards some sense of silence, we need solitude as well. And not just time away from other people. Solitude is more than aloneness. Solitude is an intentional positive aloneness. It takes us from aloneness to at oneness. In intentional separation from others, we more easily find the invisible ties between all of us. At the monastery, solitude is an explicit part of community life. In order to show up in community and in relationship, people are given their own space for solitude. This manifests literally in the rooms. Everyone's bedroom is a little sanctuary for their own spiritual life. It's for rest, yes, but it's also for prayer, sacred reading, for study. And a lot of times in community, you need to be able to just go somewhere and shut the door, walk away from the noise of other people and recenter, reground in your own inner solitude and silence. And solitude is revolutionary not just in religious communities, but for anyone following a calling. The first book I read when I moved to the monastery was A Room of One's Own by Virginia Woolf. In this little early 20th century feminist manifesto, she links the abilities to have access to one's own creative space to economic, intellectual, and spiritual freedom of women. In that room, a woman can get to know her true self. She can write her own story, express what is her deepest truth, and foster the freedom that comes from opening oneself up from the inside out. So through silence and through solitude, we are led to our true selves, out of which everything else is possible. And there's one more monastic value that fosters this sense of silence and solitude, and that is stability. Stability is a word that I think needs a revival, a reemergence in our consciousness. Stability at first suggests something stagnant, something that doesn't grow or doesn't move, something that stands still to its own detriment. But stability is not stagnant. Stability is really the opposite. It's a choice to grow in place, a choice to stand still in order to reach in deeper and reach out wider. There are two Benedictine vows that speak to this value. The first is the vow of stability. It's a commitment to one monastery, to one place, to one spiritual home for your life. And the other vow is a vow of conversatio, a vow of conversion, of ongoing change and ongoing growth throughout your life. And these two vows together express a commitment to place and a commitment to growth. It is through the stability of place, of deep roots in fertile soil, that one is able to grow and evolve throughout their spiritual life. And it's through stability that one stands still long enough in order to find silence within. From a place of stability, a life that isn't always on the move, that isn't always striving for the greener grass on the other side, one is able to find peace in place and have an active and developed life within oneself. And from that place, we are able to access deeper silence within. When you aren't always worried about where you should go or who you should visit, and instead are committed to staying still and growing deep roots in place, inner silence is something that slowly grows in you throughout your life. So, rooted in stability, grounded in solitude, we cultivate an inner silence, which opens us up to the world. This is monastic silence, as I have come to learn about it. A silence that isn't in and of itself, for itself, but a silence that starts in place, that starts within ourselves, and opens us up to all. Monastic silence leads us to both selfhood and to solidarity. And this is what it means to be anchored in silence. As I mentioned at the beginning, silence is not just for monks and nuns. Silence is liberating for anyone and everyone, especially, I believe, secular and inner spiritual communities. Another group I'm a part of, alongside Jewish and Buddhist, agnostic and Christian friends, is Nuns and Nuns. In that community, silence has been the fertile ground of our shared spiritual life. Brother Don Bisson, a Jungian psychologist and Marist brother, told someone in our group once that an interspiritual group meets not in words, but in silence. Shared prayer doesn't require shared words, just a shared presence. And when you come to God or to a wisdom tradition or to a spiritual community through varied frameworks, even varied languages, you can always meet together in silence. In addition to Brother Don, several contemporary theologians and contemplatives have repeated this idea. Dorothy Sowell, mystic activist of the 20th century, wrote in her book, The Silent Cry, that silence is the shared language of all mystical lineages. In silence, we meet beyond words, an expansive silence, not an apathetic silence. Monastic and mystic scholar Beverly Lanzetta wrote in her book, The Monk Within, interreligious dialogue revolves around the great silence. In silence, there is no religion to divide or segregate. There is not a Buddhist silence and a Christian silence and a Jewish silence. There is only silence. And finally, Trappist monk Thomas Merton also wrote about the place beyond words that people meet. Across differences, all are able to meet and participate in what he called the communion and sacrament of silence. Clearly, there is a truth of unity to be accessed that is far beyond words, as these 20th century mystics and prophets have taught us. Silence is a foundation out of which monastic and interspiritual communities alike can grow in their self, in communal bonds, and in spirit. In this noisy world, we must recover the tradition of silence. Not for the sake of silence, but for the sake of life itself. Silence opens us up to the struggles that noise and distraction drown out. Silence awakens our senses so that we are not apathetic and deadened to the cries and needs of the climate, of the oppressed. And silence stirs within and between us the interconnection which calls us to honor all life around us. Anchored in silence, may we stay open to the more of life within and beyond ourselves. May silence lead us into solidarity. And in the prayerful words of Rabbi Arthur Waskow, Amen, 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 may it be so, may we make it so, may silence lead us into solidarity. Thank you.